Joining us today on Mosaic, the author of her first novel that is entitled Firekeeper's Daughter, and it goes on sale today. And the author is Angeline Boulay. She has roots in Central Michigan, specifically in Mount Pleasant, and even more, for the purpose of your interviewer today, former neighbors, and she knew my wife even before all of that. So we welcome you back, in a sense, back home, Angeline, and congratulations on the book as it launches today. A pleasure to have some time to talk with you.
Oh, miigwech. Thank you so much for having me.
You're a member of the Sault Ste. Marie Tribe of Chippewa Indians, but we mentioned the connection to Mount Pleasant. Talk about that earlier time, your studies at Central Michigan University, and the formation that has led you to, and we've had the chance to talk about this on and off, and it's certainly been well documented in the publicity for this book, the dream that has brought you all the way to this point now of fulfilling that dream of being a writer. Talk about your early upbringing and your immersion in the culture of the Chippewa tribe.
Sure. Well, my dad is Native and my mom's not. And I didn't grow up in Sault Ste. Marie, but we always went back and visited grandparents and cousins every summer. And but my parents raised us downstate, Southwest Michigan. And I picked Central. When it was time to go to college, I just knew I wanted to go there. There was just something about walking around north end of campus that I just thought, this feels like what college is supposed to feel like. And so I just enjoyed my time there. I didn't major in English. I think I might have taken one creative writing course. I think that so many young people are told, you know, how difficult it is to become a writer, that you should study other things and not put all your eggs in one basket. I majored in psychology, management, and I also took a lot of political science courses. And yeah, I was an RA in the Towers, and I did some tutoring with the Saginaw Chippewa tribe in Mount Pleasant. And then after I graduated, I ended up going to work for the tribe there and met my husband. We had our kids. And so I spent a good number of years in Mount Pleasant, and really, you know, fond memories, great friends that I'm still in touch with. And there were two sisters from the tribe there who really took me under their wings. And there actually was a group of Native women, Ojibwe women, from the tribe and from other tribes, but worked there. And I'm just so fortunate that for whatever reason, you know, I got to hang out with them, and they really taught me a lot and just modeled the kind of strong Ojibwe woman that I wanted to be. And so, yeah, that's, I ended up, you know, working my whole career basically has been with Indian tribes, Saginaw Chippewa Indian Tribe and the Polk Hagen Band, and then my own tribe up at Sault Ste. Marie. And actually, my writing career really got its start writing grants for the tribes that I worked for. And it might not seem like good preparation, but really, every grant application, you're writing a narrative about what the community has identified as a need and how the community is going to address the issue. And so you want to create a compelling narrative because, you know, grants tend to be competitive. And so I guess I really honed my storytelling in, you know, in that sense, in the grant writing world.
Angeline Boulay's debut novel is out today. It's called Firekeeper's Daughter, and a pleasure to talk with her around Mosaic here today on WCMU. you mentioned the formation of yourself as emerging as a young adult from your time at Central Michigan University. And you mentioned, obviously, the roots that you have in the Chippewa tribe, but also the work with the other Native tribes along the way as your career was taking the steps that it did. And as one who is not Native and looking, admittedly, from the outside, I mean, I am not trying to place any stereotype on it, but we think of Native culture, but we know there are distinct tribes. And I wonder then, how much do you feel in your formation and the inspiration for what you've wanted to do comes from the shared culture, or are there unique characteristics to the stories and the histories from the different tribes that you think may have blended in to form the Angeline Boulé as a whole?
Well, you bring up a good point. Tribes are not a monolith. Even Chippewa or Ojibwe tribes are not a monolith. There are distinct differences for each tribe or band, even within a tribe. For example, my tribe is the Sault Ste. Marie tribe of Chippewa Indians, but actually my family comes from Sugar Island, and my grandparents and other relatives had been trying to get federal recognition for decades. And, you know, and then the Bureau of Indian Affairs, you know, let us know that our only shot at federal recognition would be is if we combined with other historical fishing, you know, other historic bands that were linked to different fishing villages around the Eastern Upper Peninsula. And so that's why the Sault Ste. Marie tribe of Chippewa Indians is actually a grouping of, you know, St. Ignace and Munising and Manistique and Sugar Island. So really each tribe has their own history, and a lot of it has to do with, you know, when did they get federal recognition? You know, what religious influences impacted the community, the boarding school era. So some things about our culture, our cultural teachings, there's some similarities and language. Like my father can understand different dialects. So when he hears someone from another tribal community speaking Ojibwe, or we call Anishinaabemowin, for the language, he can tell their dialect. And so I just think that's really fascinating. And it's important for people to note that, you know, each tribe is different. And then within tribes, there's a lot of diversity as well.
What were the concerns and issues that you tried to address, and maybe those that you feel are still in need of ongoing attention? You were the former director of the Office of Indian Education through the U.S. Department of Education, and during that time, what were the things, as I said, that you wanted to see as an improvements, and how much work do you feel still needs to be done?
Well, that was, you know, I had thought that that job would be, that was my dream job, really, to work in Washington, D.C. and to, you know, work for Department of Education in that role. And my office awarded $175 million a year to public schools, tribes, and other eligible entities to improve Indian education for students. And I felt like I was the right person in the right place for that job, because sitting in on meetings when different grant opportunities were being discussed and shaped, and it was really good to point out things to people that they didn't realize about tribes. And for example, there was one initiative that was going to be heavily dependent on tribes having a website, a portal for a certain requiring tribes to have a portal website for parents to sign up for something. And I said, this this will not work in every community. There are so many rural areas that still do not have broadband service, you know, internet. And I said, and plus, like Navajo Nation, it's not a matter of having internet. 20% of the homes on Navajo Nation don't have electricity. And so being able to bring that perspective of, if you're going to, and the book touches on this too, if solutions to issues are best when they come from within the community rather than imposed by another federal agency or a well-meaning organization, solving problems from within is always, you know, a better, more respectful, more empowering approach to take.
Which brings us to the book, your debut novel, Fire Keeper's Daughter. And you know, you have to love, and I'm sure you saw this as a reader. You've read reviews. We've all seen that. We've seen how the operation of publishing and so forth works. Well, now you are the writer. You are the one with the published work. So I would rather give the voice to you rather than something that somebody else says, well, this is a book about, or this is a book that is classified as, because everybody wants to call something in a certain label and a category and the next style of book that is this. But we have the chance to talk directly to you. It is your work. What is the story you have wanted to tell? Tell us about Firekeeper's Daughter.
Sure. Firekeeper's Daughter is the indigenous Nancy Drew gritty thriller that I wished I had read while I was growing up. And I was compelled, I felt compelled to write it. I had a great idea when I was 18. And, you know, life happens, three kids, a career. But when I was 44, my daughter was a preteen. And I thought, I'm going to write this book. I'm going to write a book about what it's like growing up when you're, when you feel like you don't quite fit in on the reservation, but you also don't feel completely comfortable off the reservation. And so it's that kind of finding your identity when either you're not enough or too much, depending on who's asking and why, you know, depending who you're with and why. And I'm really glad that when I wrote the story, I didn't think of, oh, young adult or genre or anything like that. I just wrote the story I wanted to tell and then worked on it with my agent and my editor in terms of positioning it where it would end up in bookstores. But it tells the story of 18-year-old Donna Fontaine. And just like me, she has a Native father and a non-Native mother and has not quite felt as if she fully belongs either in town or on the reservation. And she witnesses a shocking murder. And then she is pulled into an undercover investigation where she has to use her, I call it her science geekery, but it's her knowledge of chemistry, but also her knowledge of traditional Ojibwe medicines to protect her community before she loses anyone else. So it's part gritty thriller, but at its core, it's really a coming of age story about finding your identity and your place in your community.
Because you've now had this experience and have been able to move to that position of working for yourself, there are certainly CMU students that are coming in the generations after you that, that in talking about this even before we rolled tape today, you said things that maybe are not taught in the classes. Is there a piece of advice you would leave with them in terms of how they might pursue their own career, an author to find his voice or her voice, but also be able to navigate some of the business side of this in terms of moving on to a career like that that you have been able to do?
Well, there's a really great book out there, The Business of Writing by Jane Friedman, and it's really great information about the business of being a writer. The most important advice, though, is really, you know, find your community of writers. There are so many more resources available than even when I started writing, 10, 11, 12 years ago. There are conferences that are online that are free. Authors are doing many more events, virtual, via Zoom or other platforms. And so really the access to information now is so much more than I think that, you know, even a decade ago, it was if you didn't live in a big city and you didn't have the money to travel to, you know, these conferences, it was really hard to get the same kind of information that other people were able to get. And so I think that the access of information has really helped level the playing field a little bit more. I just say find your community of writers and take advantage of all of the free resources that are out there.
Is there a portion of the book as
yes.
any good storyteller is one to want to do that you could give folks? You talk so much about the story therein, but to give the voice, your voice, to your character and to your story, would you read a portion for us?
Sure, I'll read the prologue. I am a frozen statue of a girl in the woods. Only my eyes move, darting from the gun to their startled expression. Gun, shock. Gun, disbelief. Gun, fear. The thumb, the thumb, the thumb. The snub-nosed revolver shakes with tiny tremors from the jittery hand aiming at my face. I'm gonna die. My nose twitches at a greasy sweetness, familiar. Vanilla and mineral oil. WD-40. Someone used it to clean the gun. More scents. Pine, damp moss, skunky sweat, and cat pee. The thumb, the thumb, the thumb. The jittery hand makes a hacking motion with the gun, as if wielding a machete instead. Each diagonal slice toward the ground gives me hope. Better a random target than me. But then terror grips my heart again. The gun back at my face. Mom, she won't survive my death. One bullet will kill us both. A brave hand reaches for the gun, fingers outstretched, demanding. Give it now. The thumb that I am thinking of my mother when the blast changes everything.
Does Donis have then more stories to tell? Is there another time and place in which her activities and her involvement in her world and the world in which we all live will perhaps resonate in another story?
Well, I can't give too many details, but my book deal with Macmillan is for two books, and I'm working on book two. And all I can say is if book one is Indigenous Nancy Drew, then book two is Indigenous Lara Croft. But instead of raiding tombs, the main character is taking back ancestral remains from museums and private collectors to bring them back home. And one of her heists goes very, very badly.
Hmm. Good tease. Well done.
Yes.
Everyone must write the story and then give the tease, having us waiting and wanting for more. The stories being told by a Michigan author with roots in Mount Pleasant and at Central Michigan University as well, Angeline Boulay. It's called Fire Keeper's Daughter, her debut novel that is released today. Congratulations on all of the favorable reception in the run-up to this time of the launch of the book, and the best of luck as the adventures continue with the stories that you want to tell. Angeline, it's been great to have a chance to catch up and speak with you today. Thank you so very, very much.
Oh, miigwech, David, and thank you so much. It was fun reminiscing with you about our times in the old neighborhood and actually back in the towers, Cobb Hall.